This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We're back at Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 AM. We are going to talk more NBA basketball and more about the Utah Jazz. Of course, the season came to an end earlier this week. Yesterday, we played some exit interviews here on the show, and now we'll talk a little bit about what the future holds for the squad. Joining us on the phone right now, we have Dan Clayton of Salt City Hoops, associate editor and writer. Covers the Jazz. I mean, if you follow anyone on Twitter, you definitely want to make sure you give Dan a follow because he tweets all things Utah Jazz. That's at Dan Clayton with a zero instead of an O at the end of his name. Dan, a pleasure to get you back on the show. Thank you for the time today.
Hey, all, it's fun talking to you, Jordan. How's it going?
It's going well. A little bit sad that the basketball season is now over, at least here in Utah. I think it was somewhat, you could anticipate that we were going to get Houston and Golden State in the Western Conference Finals, but at the same time, it was a very entertaining year. And I know it ended pretty similar to the way it came to a close last year as well. But, Dan, it just seems like this was a rewarding year for Jazz fans.
Oh, for sure. I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, if you look at last year's end compared to this year's end, a lot of it was, like, remarkably, eerily similar, right? Overcame injuries to wind up as a 600-ish team. First round of the playoffs on the road against a team with an identical record but more star power. Advance, you know, face an elite historic offense in the second round, put up some resistance, but, you know, so like the way it ended, I think, you know, in terms of story points, very similar, but the broad feeling, I think, around the team is very different than it was 12 months ago, and mostly that just comes down to the uncertainty that loomed, you know, 365 days ago versus right now. There's definitely a feeling, and we heard this in the exit interviews, there's definitely a feeling of, you know, Donovan Mitchell said, we'll be back. Other guys said, we're just getting started. There's definitely a sense of this is the beginning of something and not kind of potentially the end, which is certainly the reality that the Jazz were facing 12 months ago.
I don't think we have to go down this route and have a conversation about it, but for me, the quote of the day at exit interviews, and you really never know what you're going to get, but I think Jay Crowder said it best when he was asked what Utah lacks in regards to what Boston and Cleveland has, because he spent time with both of those teams very recently, and he says geography. To me, that was the most truthful statement I heard at any exit interview so far this year. I mean, he was just being, it's simple as that. I mean, look, this team plays in the Western Conference. Regardless of what side of the bracket you're on, you were going to run into Houston or Golden State in the second round.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a pretty well-established reality now that for the last 15, 20 years, the Western Conference has just been a tough place to play. And especially at the top of the conference, you know, like, teams have to think about, you know, if they're going to get good and you know, try to blaze a path to the promised land, they're going to have to go through Golden State or Houston to, you know, and in many cases, Golden State and Houston. And those are two elite teams that do things at a historic level. If you think about the offense of both of those teams, and then, you know, this year Houston got really good with defense as well. It's a tough conference to be in. I don't know that the Jazz are going to be. I think the Jazz could be better served by just focusing on what they're doing and staying the course. You never know how long those teams, those dynasties, are going to stay together. So just keep being you. Keep getting better. And, you know, let all of that sort itself out. I don't think teams that try to sort of time their title window around what other teams are doing tend to be really successful with that. I think the Jazz have good principles. They've got, you know, good players who are under contract for a while now. If you think about Donovan's contract situation, Rudy Gobert just signed an extension. Joe Ingles is here for a while. So just go and be you and get better and let all of that take care of itself. But Jay's absolutely right. I mean, the Jazz would have been a lot more competitive in the Eastern Conference, as would a lot of Western Conference teams.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Well, let's look ahead into the offseason, and we can talk about some of the moves this past season. I mean, we've talked about Gordon Hayward, of course, leaving. The Jazz went out and they acquired Ricky Rubio, and they also gave a big contract to Joe Ingles. Now, depending on who you're talking to, that Ingles contract may have been, kind of working in conjunction trying to keep Gordon Hayward, which obviously didn't work. But at the same time, they went out and they got Rubio. And to me, Rubio in the offseason was a guy that I thought was going to enhance Rodney Hood and what he could bring to the table. That's why I was so interested in the Jazz getting a guy like Rubio, because I thought, okay, this is going to help take Hood to the next level. Obviously, that didn't happen. But, Dan, it was obvious when Rubio was on the court and he was right, the Jazz offense was much more effective. That turned out to be a huge move for the team, and again next year it's a very cap friendly figure at $14.8 million for a guy that had the production that he had this year when he was healthy.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think people still underestimate the role that Ricky Rubio had in the Jazz's turnaround, right? They were 19 and 28 in mid-January, and then from that point, I think ripped off 29 wins out of their final 35 games or something close to that. And, you know, Rudy Gobert gets a lot of the credit because he got healthy, and you know, obviously he's an all-defensive type presence when he's healthy. Donovan Mitchell gets a lot of credit because obviously he was a prolific scorer, especially during that second half of the season. But man, Ricky is just, when he is, like you say, when he's right, you know, when he's making good decisions. And I think the big key for him, and I've spoken about this and I'll be writing about this in the coming days, for Ricky, I think the key is he just needs to put pressure on the defense. And I think Quinn Snyder, what Quinn kept telling him during the first half of the season is like, look, I don't care if the shots go in or not. We need you to force the defense to guard you. We need you to put pressure on the other team, and I'll live with the shots falling or not falling. And I think Ricky finally started to take that to heart in, you know, January and early February. And you know, if you look at the way Ricky's stats correspond to Jazz wins and Jazz losses, it didn't really matter what kind of a shooting night he had. It mattered if he was playing aggressive, if he was forcing the defense to play him. And that's really important. I think it's a model for Dante Exum to follow, frankly, as Exum gets healthy and resumes his, what fans hope is his development path. It's just that notion that, like, look, Dante Exum is not a natural shooter. That's not what he's going to be great at in the NBA. But it doesn't matter. It matters that you keep your pedal to the metal and that you force defenses to know that you're there. And it really hurt the Jazz in the first half of the season to be able to just ignore Ricky. And then all of a sudden, Rubio and the Jazz started just making the defense be aware of him, be aware of actions involving him, and that bent the defense in ways that they weren't doing early on. And it was a huge key to the Jazz turning things around.
Again, we're being joined right now by Dan Clayton of Salt City Hoops as we break down the Utah Jazz 2018, 2017, 2018 season. Let's talk about the offseason. You and I have had multiple conversations, Dan, now I think over the last 3 years about Derek Favors. Mm-hmm. And how long this guy's tenure in Utah could actually last. Now he's an unrestricted free agent. Is Favors, has he played his last game in a Jazz uniform?
Ooh, it's a tough one. I really don't know. And before this season, I think I would have said that my money would be on Derek Favors not being part of the Jazz for game one of next season, whether that meant an in-season trade or not coming back via free agency. Derek had a good year, which he did. Let's be honest. Derek Favors had a good year for the Jazz. He was important for the Jazz. He bounced back physically. He bounced back statistically. He had a fun year. I mean, watch Derek, you know, as we go back and relive the season with all these highlight videos and recaps and things like that, watch Derek in some of these post-game celebrations. Watch Derek's dynamic with Donovan Mitchell, where, you know, he kind of took the, you know, big brother role and holding Donovan under his wings at times. He had a good relationship with Rick. He had a good relationship with Rudy. I really don't know what's going to happen with Derek Favors. I know that he wants to go somewhere where he can have a major role, and I think he knows that going forward, the Jazz are going to try to play with more space, and that means he can't always play with Rudy Gobert, and that limits his minutes because Rudy Gobert is a 35-minute a night guy. But at the same time, I think, you know, he spoke yesterday about just how much he loves this group, how much he thought the season was great. He said it was one of his most rewarding seasons ever. But then on the other hand, his family has already moved away from Salt Lake City. Maybe that's in preparation for, you know, they foresee a move coming. It's really a tough one to call. But at this point, he's the longest tenured Jazz man. And either way, fans should just be appreciative of the no-nonsense, you know, lunch pail type of attitude Derek Favors has brought to the Jazz for the last eight seasons.
Well, across the board, I mean, he played in 77 games this year in the regular season. That's as many as he has played, I believe, in his entire career, if I remember right. So I guess the question would be, when he hits the free agent market, I don't know what the dollar signs are going to look like for Derek Favors, but am I wrong in thinking that maybe this guy is an older 26-year-old? When I look at it and I see he's only 26 years old, maybe it's because he is the longest tenured Jazz guy. It just seems like he's an old 26, doesn't it?
I know. It's crazy that he's only 26 when you think about his experience and everything he's been through health-wise and that sort of thing. You're right. And the reality of the cap situation in this year's NBA, the summer's NBA, is that not a lot of teams are going to have money to go throw eight figures at guys. If a lot of the star free agents stay home, then maybe some of those eight-figure salary slots roll to guys like Derek Favors. I think someone will find a way to pay Derek Favors if he's available and wants to move. But you never know. And if stars start to move, then all of a sudden that money dries up. And I think a real possibility for Fave is he might take a one-year contract, which would benefit the Jazz, because then they kind of keep their powder dry for next offseason when there are some free agents that might fit what the Jazz are trying to do, what they're trying to build. It buys them another year of Derek Favors, and then Fave could hit the free agent market next season when more teams will have money. I do think that's a distinct possibility. But again, he'd have to be okay with knowing that there's kind of this unspoken cap on his minutes and his role, because the Jazz just aren't going to close a ton of games with Favors and Gobert together. They're both really good, but they're just spacing challenges with that, and there are some things that the two of them can't do together.
Two other players that will definitely be, you're going to hear these names mentioned throughout the offseason, would be Dante Exum and Alec Burks. I think those may be the two hottest names that you hear surrounding any possible movement this offseason for the Jazz.
Yeah, for sure. Alec, we've been thinking for like 2 years. I'll just speak for myself. I've been thinking for like 2 years. This is when it makes sense for the Jazz to trade Alec Burks, and then they don't, and then he comes out and has a really good series against Houston and helps the Jazz find some scoring when there weren't a lot of other sources for it. So, look, Alec is another one of those guys who's been around longer than anybody but Derek Favors. He's a part of the fabric of the Jazz, and it might not feel like it because he's had so many injury problems too, and he's been in and out of the rotation even when he's been healthy. But he's been around for a long time. I still think that, just financially speaking, if you look at where the Jazz are at financially and how they can add talent and avoid the luxury tax, Alec Burks's $11.5 million that he's owed next year is probably bigger than his role. Like, I don't think he's an $11.5 million player in the construct of what role they'll ask him to play. And that's the reason why I still think that they will see if they can parlay some of his postseason success into some interest in the trade market. But again, I keep being wrong about that, so we'll see. And then Exum, I don't know. That's a tough one to predict. I don't know if you have any thoughts about Exum, Jordan, and what the market might entail for him. But, ended his season on another, not serious injury, it looks like, just a hamstring pull, but ended his season on another injury, heading into restricted free agency. I still think the Jazz will match anything that's semi-reasonable in terms of a restricted free agent offer sheet, but it's just tough to know what the market will look like out there among the other 29 teams.
Yeah, I've learned to accept the fact that teams will, there are franchises out there that will overpay for players. Look no further than Brooklyn. I mean, they will, in restricted free agency, there's a team that's going to pay. So Exum to me is a guy, Dan, and I don't know if this makes sense, but it seems like he's finally growing into his body and learning how to use the tools that he actually has, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so two things I'd say about X. Number one is, we're starting to see that he's getting an idea of the fact that he has a couple of elite NBA skills, that he can lock guys down with his defense and that he can get from point A to point B with the basketball as quickly as anyone. And those are elite things, and if he figures out how to use them, then, you know, like, that's the key tip for him having a long career. I think the next step is him learning how to kind of change speed and be a little bit more crafty and clever in his movements to start to draw contact and be better at finishing around the rim. The second thing I'd say about Exum, and it just goes back to your point about, you know, some NBA team will pay him, and it's the fact that I know for a fact that there are still believers out there in Dante Exum, you know, speaking of NBA GMs, because I've heard scuttlebutt from the trade deadline. I know for a fact that there are still GMs that are interested in Dante Exum. I'll leave it at that because I don't like reporting on other people's sources, but I have heard that there were people who were asking about Dante, and so I wouldn't be surprised if someone presents him with an offer sheet.
We can end with this, Dan. You step into the shoes of Dennis Lindsay here over the next 4 months. What do you try to accomplish this offseason to make sure that this team gets to the next level? When I say next level, I'm not even necessarily saying Western Conference Finals next season, because, again, I believe the Western Conference is going to be even more loaded next year. Obviously, L.A. is going to be in a position to bring in a lot of talent. We could go from two elite teams to three elite teams in the Western Conference. I'm talking about a team that could potentially battle for home court advantage in the first round and a 50-win team. What steps do you take from this point on?
Well, you know, I think there's a real argument to be made for not outsmarting yourself at this stage in the process. There are a lot of players that the Jazz could go out and get, and then you stop and think about, you know, okay, does that particular dude at small, you know, starting at small forward make the Jazz better than Joe Ingles starting at small forward? Joe Ingles, who, by the way, is one of the best three-point shooters in the league and a smart defender and, you know, elite at facilitating in the pick and roll from the wing. Like, you know, Joe Ingles is a really good player, and you could upgrade on him for sure, but I'm not sure what the number is of guys at that position who would be an upgrade. Derek Favors is another guy. Everyone says, go replace Derek Favors with a starting quality stretch big. And that sounds great. Now go look at the list. How many bigs are there in the NBA who are starting quality, who can make three-point shots, who would not feel like a downgrade in macro terms from Derek Favors? And that's the thing. This Jazz team is going to get better even if they just stay the course, because Donovan Mitchell is going to get better naturally with age. Dante Exum should, you know, provided he stays healthy. Ricky Rubio now has a year under his belt with the Jazz and just hasn't really had stability in his career when you think about all the coaching changes he's gone through. So there are going to be some guys who just benefit from another year of being better and learning the system. Jay Crowder came to the Jazz midseason, and now he's going to have an offseason to really learn the playbook and understand the role that he can have in the Jazz offense and how he can support their defensive identity. That's not to say that you don't go out and make moves, but I think you have to think about those moves in the context of, you know, are we, you know, I think Dennis has to think about it from a standpoint of, is this an on-paper upgrade that actually limits the role of someone who's really important to our identity and how we play? And I think that's how he'll think about it.
Dan, we just had a 20-minute conversation about the Utah Jazz, and we didn't mention Donovan Mitchell one time. That's got to be a record when talking about the Utah Jazz for any outlet.
No, we talked about him early, didn't we?
I don't think we did.
I thought we mentioned his scoring and how important. Anyway, yeah, you're right. I mean, he's a special kid. You know, had a prolific scoring postseason, one of the highest scoring postseasons for a rookie in like 40 years, up there with Admiral and Magic Johnson, and did some things that even MJ didn't do, because MJ's first playoffs was just a 4-game appearance in his rookie season. Donovan is off to a special start, and, you know, obviously he has a lot he can still get better on. But, you know, the good news, Jazz fans, is the Jazz control his rights for, you know, the next three seasons. And then because of restricted free agency, most likely they'll control his rights for the three or four seasons after that. So, you know, Donovan Mitchell's going to be a Jazz man for a long time, and that's good news for the Jazz, because he's off to a really, really special start.
Dan, it's great stuff as always when you come on the show. Please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, Dan Clayton with a zero instead of an O. So Dan Clayton, 0N, is my Twitter handle. Follow me there. And as always, I'll be writing and editing great stuff at saltcityhoops.com.
Hopefully we can get you back on during the offseason as things start to develop, Dan.
Of course, yeah.
That's great insight from Dan Clayton on the Utah Jazz. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back for the final touches on this Thursday edition of the show.